Hello there.
Hey, Curtis.
Hey, how you doing, Terry?
How are you? Me and Jeremy are in the same room. Is that how you want to do it?
Oh, yeah, that's perfect. Hello, Jeremy.
Okay.
How are you?
Hi.
Okay. So here you guys are chomping at the bit, wondering what today's going to bring, right?
Well, we're looking. We did our we watched the videos.
Okay.
We read chapter one.
Okay.
We have Jeremy ran we called Wells Fargo to where Jeremy dug in and found a really good detailed report on households.
Okay.
Because you know we're all about segmentation round one.
Right. Right.
Okay.
Okay.
So yeah, we've done the homework.
Okay, well, good. So, look, one of the best ways to kind of, you know, get started is, you know, every week on these calls, the calls are recorded, so I've already pushed the record button. You know,
okay.
You're really the only ones that get access to the recording, and what will happen is Cindy or Lori will send you a link, which will give you the recording of this call in case you need to go back and reinforce some of the concepts.
Okay.
What I do on these calls is I generally start with your agenda first, and then I go into the materials, which is kind of like a reinforcement, and ask and entertain any questions whatsoever you have about the materials that we covered, and then we go from there. So
okay.
How's it going? Okay?
Sounds good.
All right. So and during the course and scope of this thing, I'm gonna find out more and more about you, and I want you guys to get very, very comfortable really asking me anything about anything that comes up in terms
okay.
of your business. So that's kinda how we'll start.
All right.
Now, before we begin, is there anything specifically that you need me to pay close attention to?
Not at the moment. I think as we get into this a little more, we're going to ask some questions, but
okay.
It's our first day, we're just kind of
we're
on it with you now.
Yeah, we're newbies.
Yeah.
So lead the way, Curtis.
All righty. Okay, so week one starts segmentation. And, you know, the whole idea of segmentation is to get this business at a manageable level. I know you're having fun, but we want to make sure that you're getting and doing the things that you most enjoy. The second item is we want to give clients the best experience that they can get. The third is, you know, reference your video. And then the fourth, in segmentation, there's no more A, B, C, and D clients. Okay? So,
well, you know, it's funny you mention that because, Curtis, not to jump in here, but, you know, I was thinking to you because I went out to Wells Fargo has a Finet forum twice a year, and one of the programs was their Delta program, which is,
okay.
you know, coaching. They
right.
not only had, they had AAA, AA, single A, B, C, D, and E.
Okay.
And that's impossible. How would you ever be able to know between AA, AAA, it was crazy.
Yeah, it's that. Yeah, that's and you'll begin to understand why as we go on why that type of segmentation strategy really is not efficient and not effective. Okay, so let's talk about the minimum service level. This is the kind of the client experience that you are going to be delivering. So these numbers are going to be firmly implanted in your mind. It's 12-4-2. 12 connotates the number of client contact per year, 12 times. The 4 connotates the number of client reviews. Now, of the 4, 2 of the reviews are done in person and 2 are done by phone. Okay? So that's the concept of 12-4-2, a one-hour response to problems, okay, with a 24-hour resolution. We call this response a rapid response to client problems, with each client having a financial plan, okay? Mm-hmm. So just to communicate it, if you were a client, I'd say, look, the nature of our practice has evolved. We are enhancing our client experience. In that regard, each client will be receiving 12 monthly contacts, 4 appointments per year, with 2 of the 4 appointments being in-person reviews and the other 2 being telephonic reviews. We want to make sure that each of our client has a financial plan and that we provide a one-hour response to problems with a 24-hour resolution, and that we're also focused on intergenerational planning. Okay, so that's your minimum service level. Now, any questions on that?
I think that's pretty straightforward.
Yeah, that's pretty straightforward. You know, I was kind of curious though, Curtis, when we say financial plan, we have something called Envision that's our financial planning tool. Do we use something that you have, Curtis, or do we use something that we have on our, as part of our platform here?
Yeah, you use your firm's financial planning,
gotcha.
Where it may have a retirement component to it, an estate planning component to it, a retirement needs analysis component to it, but you use your plan, okay?
Okay, gotcha. Thank you.
And the reason why this is going to be important is when we get to matters of urgency and matters that aren't so urgent, we want you to be inventorying opportunities that come out of the plan. Okay. So, as you can see, if you implement this 12-4-2 strategy, you're going to only have so much time to implement this level of service, right? So, if you have a team, each team member should have no more than 100 relationships.
Now, when you're saying relationship, are you saying
household? Yeah,
household.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay.
So each member of the team should have that number, which means if it's a two-person team, is Jeremy a producer as well on the team, or?
Not at the moment.
Not at the moment. No.
Okay. All right. So the way this would work then is you have, Terry, somewhere around 85 relationships to a maximum of 100. So
right.
What have to do in order to put forth that service level is you have to get down to your core. Now, what we found in the early stages of implementing the service level, clients bring you more assets. But we've got to learn just a little bit more before we get to that. Okay. So what you want to do in terms of getting down to your core is looking at that 80-20 rule, Pareto's rule, where, you know, 80% of your revenue is probably going to come from 20% of your clients. So what you have to do is determine who your best clients are. And we have 9 screens to determine why you should keep a client.
Mm-hmm.
Now,
right. Okay.
You know, everyone is at various stages of segmentation. Some have done it. Some are not quite there. Some fall into the middle. But what we've known is that this is a process that you have to continue for the life of your business, that you will always be screening and segmenting and determining who your best relationships are.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, before we'll come back to the 9 screens to determine who stays and who you keep.
Okay.
But first, what I want to do is I want to get into what we mean by the minimum and the maximum. The absolute minimum number of household relationships is the real average of your practice. These are going to be the 85 to 100 relationships that you're going to keep.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. If I took your clients, and let's say you had 200, I know you have 150, but you plugged them in, and if you contacted 5 a day, which is pretty robust, then in a 30-day or a 20-day period, you can only get 100. So there's going to be 50 that don't even get reached.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why that's the other reason why we begin to start looking at that. When you'll be put through a scheduler program by Cindy that shows you how to schedule each of the relationships.
Okay.
Okay. So now we know what the absolute minimum is going to be. Okay? Mm-hmm. Real average of practice. Now your target minimum, okay, is the average of the top 20% of the 100 that you keep, meaning that those are the clients that you want to have in the future. Okay?
Okay.
Now, you've indicated that your average is about 250, but if I took the top 20%, is that number going to be 500 or 750? Or a million. So you need to determine what that target minimum is going to be.
So, okay, so we have 110 households.
Yeah,
okay.
I put 150 out there. Basically we've got 110, Curtis.
We have 110 households, 123 million in assets.
Okay.
So let's say we take the top 20 households.
Okay.
We're still not below, we're at $1.6 million.
Okay.
When we get to top 20.
Is the lowest account in that top
20. Top 20.
Okay.
That's just the lowest account.
Yeah.
Lowest.
That is fantastic.
Number. The thing is we moved to Wells Fargo a little over a year ago, year and a half ago.
Okay.
Almost 2 years.
Yeah,
we basically, we did a lot of the segmentation there. We left behind a lot of accounts.
See, I read your book about 5 years ago, Curtis, and so a lot of the segmentation, like Jeremy just said, this is what we want to do. So we've already, in the videos and things I hear, segmentation might be the hardest task for an advisor who's been in the business for 30 years. Am I right about that?
Yeah, you're right about that. And in your case, we might be talking about 10 households at the moment.
Yeah, because you know, we just don't, I'm not in the business that long, and I took over a practice, but, you know, to do the business the way we want to do the business, we had to, you know, we wanted to leave, but that's where we've set ourselves up to do this.
Okay.
Which, you know, which is why we're excited to get going, because it's something that, and like I say, the top 20, if you could just touch on that, Curtis, and go back to just to make sure I have the top 20 of the 100 would be the ones where you want to work on the multi-generational. Is that what you mean, or can you elaborate on that?
I want you to deliver the same level of service to everyone.
Okay.
The top 20% is the group that we later focus on that are going to deliver additional assets, centers of influence, where we'll begin to focus our client acquisition efforts. So all I want you to be able to know for now is to do the math on what your targeted minimum household for growth is going to be in the future. So, you know, set your site at 250 as an example, then that's going to define your practice. If you set your site on your target household, and it might be 1.6 million, that's where we're going to begin to grow the practice. Now, you should X out, like if there's a $25 million household in there, just take that one out. Maybe it brings your number down to, you know, 1.3, 1.4. Not sure.
Yeah.
Okay. Like, because top four clients.
Okay.
Two of the top four clients, we've brought over all their assets.
Okay.
Already. Because we started, before our speaking with you, we started a push to bring over all outside assets just based on, because we have a lot of clients with physical certificates.
Okay.
And we know it's a mess when people die, so we've been getting ahead of the ball on that.
Okay,
but our largest relationship is 7.3 million. So we don't, it's a nice thing that we don't have any one client that is disproportionately large in terms of the percentage of assets that we have under management.
Okay.
To get under $1 million, we're down at the 35th client is when we start.
Is when we get under a million. Is that typical, Curtis?
Yeah. So what you have to do next is define the relationship that you are willing to accept. You know, I remember first starting out in the business. And, you know, the deal was when we first started, if they were living, breathing, and had a pulse, we took them in as a client. That's no longer the case. So you have to find your absolute minimum household that you want to go at. So why don't, if you know what you think that number is today, or you want to brainstorm it, come back to me next week. But you need to define that. Is it going to be is it going to be a million? Is it going to be a million two? Or are you going to target those individuals that have at least $1.5 million in assets?
And we're basically when we're talking that, we're saying new clients coming in here.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Okay. So in other words, we work with. So you're talking to your CPA, you're having a sit down. We're going to coach you on how to handle these conversations or those with centers of influence. And we're going to say, so, you know, my ideal client has at least $1.5 million in assets. Okay? So now that center of influence, that CPA, knows who they need to refer you to. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So they don't just assume, oh, here's the guy with $100,000. CPA saying, I got no skin in the game, so here you go. Here's $100,000. You know, we want you to dictate what that number is going to be.
Okay.
Now, I'm not saying that you'll never accept anything lower than that number. But those folks have to know that that is your target, that, you know, when that CD comes due or these other assets come due, that they're going to come to you.
Okay.
So absolute minimum, average of your practice, it's the 100 relationships that you're keeping. Your target minimum is the average of the top 20%, you know, that you are going to be targeting in terms of assets.
Okay.
Our average of our top 20% is, I would say, probably not under $2 million.
Okay. All right. So now I'm hearing 1.6, but maybe it's 2. Okay. Whatever that number
is, our lowest number in our top 20 clients.
Yeah, the smallest client of the top 20, Curtis, is 1.6 million.
And it goes to 7.
Yeah.
So if I were just to put my pencil in the middle of that list, it's 3.7.
Okay.
That's the that's the middle.
Yeah.
Now I'm talking top 20%, not top 20 households.
Well, we have 110 households, so I'm just,
Okay.
It's pretty close.
It's pretty close. So let's, if I were to say 20, 25, the top 25, I'm still at $3 million.
Okay.
Yeah.
Gentlemen, that's your target. Okay. So we'll talk about this more as we continue. But now what happens is you have this focus on household relationships now, that those are the ones that are most appealing, the ones that you want to focus on. Okay. So this is what you're going to communicate to centers of influence. Exceptions can be made between your absolute minimum and your target. So if your absolute minimum, might be, let's say, $1 million, and your target is 3, you're going to avoid assets that are below that minimum.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So the absolute, so I'm getting this straight. The average is what?
3.
No. And that is our target number, right?
Right. The average
and then our absolute minimum is just a number we come up with in our head that we're comfortable with.
Yeah. It is, if you just took the average of assets on the 100 and you divided it by 100. Okay.
Basically everything divided by 100.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay.
1.2, right?
1.2, yeah.
Okay.
So that's our absolute minimum is 1.2 million.
Right. So you won't take anything less than that unless somebody says, look, I only have 500,000, but, my business is going to be sold and I'm bringing you 5 million. Well, what are you going to do? You're going to take it.
Right. Okay.
All right. So now the max we talked about is your maximum number of accounts that you're willing to work with. And I think it is somewhere around 100.
Mm-hmm.
Go to 85, but it's about 100. You maybe aren't going to reduce too much until you get on the client acquisition strategy, because we have to free up time and we have to free up space to bring in these other relationships. And we're going to coach you on 9 different client acquisition methodologies. You might work 4 or 5 of them, but there's no cold calling involved in any of them.
Thank God.
So you won't need to be worried about that.
Okay.
All right. Now, let's talk about, you're going to be at times almost forced to take on a smaller relationship. They may be the uncle or aunt of a key relationship. They may be the children of a key relationship. Mm-hmm. We call those butlers. A butler sees the 4-1 service, 4 contacts and 1 review. Okay? Now, mm-hmm. 3 butlers is equal to 1 household receiving the 12-4-2 service. So you want to be careful how many butlers that you take on.
So do kids, are kids considered butlers?
Yes.
So let's say our biggest household.
I'm talking about adult children.
Yeah,
okay.
Right. Adult children being old, working, maybe on their own, mid-20s up to 30, 40 years old.
Right.
Okay.
And you're working with them for 2 reasons. 1, they may inherit the old man's assets, and 2, the old man might get upset if you won't work with them.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why they're classified as butlers, and that's why you take them. And they should not exceed 20% of your practice. Okay. Any questions on butlers?
No.
Nope. Over. We're good there.
Okay. So the next thing I want to get into is these client screens. And this is really good because, you want to keep clients for all the right reasons. And so you're going to look at their account by production. You're going to look at the value of their assets. If they got $5 million in treasuries and just keep rolling them over and will never do business with you, then you got to evaluate the value of the assets. Liability. We've all had these clients where the phone rings and somebody says, John Jones is on the line. And then you reach for it, and then you say, oh, man, I'm just waiting to pick up that phone. Well, likability is important. So that's going to determine whether or not you keep them or if they stay. Trust. That's important. You don't want to work with people that you tell them one thing, and then it morphs into something completely different than what you originally stated, okay? Because that's an accident waiting to happen. So can you trust these folks? The fifth one is, do they accept your recommendations? Okay? Because, look, you guys are the experts now. And, you're knowledgeable. And you're making recommendations because you think they fit. So you got to have a client on the other end that accepts your recommendations.
Mm-hmm.
The sixth point is profitability. And this is critical. And you can measure that in terms of revenue based on the amount of time that you spend with clients. Okay? You deserve to be paid. The seventh one is the opportunity for future growth. Do you have a relationship that's going to be perpetually stagnant, or is there an opportunity for future growth, increasing assets, so on and so forth? The eighth reason that you're going to keep somebody is they're a center of influence. Okay? For example, I'm a member of a few nonprofits. I'm on the board of a foundation. I have a very affluent fraternal network of doctors, lawyers, very successful people. And so if you're a financial advisor, you're probably going to want to get a relationship with me so that I can introduce you to some colleagues and some friends.
Mm-hmm.
So you want to be looking at that in terms of center of influence.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. The ninth one really, I mean, those are the client screens, but we throw in this ninth one, and we call it the rule of common sense. And, you know, you're going to evaluate all of this, and then you're going to use your common sense to determine if these individuals are kept as clients. And, you know, and you'll look at whether or not they have the potential to be a center of influence. Okay. We're gonna coach you on how to cultivate centers of influence and work with them as we move forward in the program. So to kind of summarize is you want to introduce the service model to clients. You want to improve the quality of the client experience. Okay. Now, the next thing is this whole idea of appointments and everyone having a specific time each month where they're going to expect to have a conference call with you, okay? So we'll coach more on this, but typically, a notice goes out with the agenda of topics that are going to be discussed. It's confirmed. And on Tuesday at 9:30, you're going to be speaking with Mary Smith. Some of the topics might be rebalancing the portfolio. It might be an analysis of the insurance policies, long-term care, any subject that is pertinent to Mary Smith's situation. Now, you're scheduling the appointments because you value their time. You're going to be courteous. You're going to talk about action steps. And after the call, you're going to send out a very brief executive summary. These are the little things that are really important that are going to create leverage in your practice. The executive summary says, this is what we talked about, this is what we agreed to, and these are the next steps. You're almost setting up an agenda for the next call. Done in email format, very, very brief and succinct. Okay.
Just a few sentences and sort of a recap.
Yeah, some bullets. Okay. Recap.
Okay.
Why do we do the call once a month? Well, I hear all kinds of stories where, you know, the FA got to the client 4 months later. That was the last contact. In the meanwhile, the client had sold his business. Goldman Sachs swooped in and got $5 million in assets. And it was a missed opportunity for the financial advisor. And the real reason he didn't get the business is he just wasn't aware of it. He just wasn't keeping in touch. He had too many relationships. So that's just a rationale for the monthly call. And you're going to have clients that are going to say, you know, I thought our level of contact was perfect. But there's so many topics of interest, so many topics of education, clients are reading, ideas format, and we want them to jot them down in their folder, bring them to your attention, so that when you start your call, but before I get into the agenda and I have a number of topics to discuss, I want to make sure that there's nothing on your mind that we need to discuss first. Okay, so now you're organizing your communication. It's agenda-based. It's meaningful conversation. And every call isn't an attempt to sell them something. Some calls are planting the seed and making clients aware that you have in-depth knowledge and a number of arrows in your quiver, and that there are also important issues to discuss. Any questions on that and the rationale for why we're setting up?
So, Curtis, when the agenda is determined, how, let's say, for example, that we've got a client, Gary Young, and we have him scheduled for a call next Monday at 9:30.
Okay.
So we've got to come up with, all right, so it's our monthly call with Gary. How do we determine, does he help determine the agenda with us, or do we kind of say, Gary, here's what we think we should talk about, or do we get client input as to what they want us to talk about?
Okay. Excellent.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, excellent question. So remember, every time you get on a call with a client, things can change. So look, I have some agenda items that I would like to cover, Joe. But before I get into my agenda, I want to make sure that there's nothing that's come up in between calls that are priorities of yours that we need to discuss.
Perfect. Then you turn it all the way around, and then you go, based on what the client is wondering or, thinking about. Okay, gotcha. Okay.
So sometimes their agenda is going to trump your agenda.
That's fine.
Okay.
It's probably better that way, I think.
Yeah, and it's going to happen from time to time. Now, the next thing is that you've been doing these plans now because you're working your 12-4-2. And items of, less urgency are coming out. We want to talk about long-term care. We want to talk about, gifting strategies for the children. We want to talk about the potential for meeting with our estate planning attorney regarding your living trust. There are a number of things. We want to talk about rebalancing your portfolio in light of the changes in the economy. So we're going to help you create these 12 to 24-month agendas.
Okay. I'm thinking now, I'm just sort of thinking out loud. What I sent Cindy yesterday, I would say that less than 10% of our clients have an envisioned plan. So my thinking is the agenda for these people, because so few of our clients have a plan, it may be that the agenda is centered on, creating plans for everybody and topics along those lines, I would think.
Well, yeah, look. Here's kind of like agenda topics. You know what they are. You're going to have to, in the beginning of the year, it's got to be about, what's in store for the economy. You got to have a mid-year update.
You're
going to do tax minimization strategies, retirement plan distributions. So you're not even going to have to worry about having enough to talk about.
True. Okay.
Your challenge is going to be to get to those agenda topics over a 12-month time frame.
Okay.
And what that is going to translate into is more assets, more production and revenue per household.
Okay. Got it.
Now, scheduling kind of makes people squirm a little bit. Busy people schedule everything, and it eliminates the time waster of phone tag, where you call, they're not available, they call, you're not available. So creating specific times to speak are going to be critical. I mean, the other day I had a doctor's appointment. They scheduled it 2 weeks, and here's the time. and that's the time I show up. And I, you know what? I don't debate it. I don't argue about it. I just have to schedule around it.
Okay.
So that is a level of confidence that I want you to begin to have as you create these scheduling opportunities.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
The final thing I want to, we're talking about, is putting this wall of confidence around your best clients, okay? And, you know, responding to positive action with another positive action, okay? So, stair step to the stars, final thing I want to talk about. And this is the process of training advisors with different minimums, so that when you reassign clients that you've outgrown, they're going to be treated similarly to your supernova process, okay? So that you're not just putting a client in the hands of someone that's not going to treat them right.
Mm-hmm.
And you may put that business on a split basis for a period of time when you make those assignments, but that's left up to you. But the client still receives that level of supernova service.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't want them to receive a lesser service. And oftentimes, clients bring in CDs, annuities, and other assets because they know your target minimums that you work with. Okay, so that's kind of a review, overview of your first session on segmentation. Any other questions?
No.
No, I think we're good right now, yeah.
Yeah, we've got, no, we're good. Just, you know, some things to think about for sure as far as minimums and averages and, yeah, I got to get my head around the fact that we've got to, you know, there's agendas and, you know, this is truly something, the organization is something we just don't have. I just, you know, it's great, but it seems a little daunting, you know, at times, but.
It will. And look, don't even worry about it because I'm going to perpetually be reviewing these concepts throughout the program. Okay?
Okay. Got it.
And so whenever you feel like you're getting stuck or you need some reinforcement, you know, just let me know. Let me know. And I do know that we covered a lot of material in a short period of time.
Mm-hmm.
So, and if I throw too much at you, slow me down. If I go too slow, speed me up.
No, we're good. No, we're just making sure we're staying. You know, I guess in preparation for next week, we get links and videos to watch prior in addition to chapter 2.
Exactly.
Right? Okay. So, hey, Curtis, I do know, and I emailed Cindy that on the 12th of June, that's, you know, that's week 3, I'm going to need to move that to maybe Monday or Tuesday. That's the only Wednesday that may be a conflict. Would that be all right?
Yeah, we've already done that, and I told Lori it was okay, and so they're going to work with you on that schedule.
Okay, great.
All right.
That's excellent.
Okay. Well, guys, look, I enjoyed our first call.
Thank you, Curtis.
I went a little longer.
Thank you.
All right, thanks, Curtis. We'll catch up next week.
Okay, you guys take care. Bye-bye.
All right, thanks again. All right, bye.